Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. My special guest tonight is a real treat. We are going to be talking with Richard Allen Miller, that's Dr. Miller, who is just an amazing guy. Besides being a genius, he's a wild man. And you know that I love wild men, so this is going to be great. We're going to be discussing some topics that he is quite the expert in, and he is also an ex-man in black. So listeners, scoot close to the radio here, and let's get on with what's going on here. Let me just give a short intro. Welcome to the show, Rick. And
thank you. You make me blush.
You know, I've been known for doing that.
I know, but goodness. All right.
Oh, this is so much fun. Let's do just a short intro. I know you've got a huge amount of information and things that you've done in your entire life, but give people the down and dirty about yourself, if you would.
I'm a physicist. My academic backgrounds are in solid-state physics, although when I worked Navy intelligence, I started when I came out of graduate school, they apparently had me pegged in high school. You know, you win science fair awards with Navy Cruiser Award, those kinds of things, and it becomes like you become marked and they kind of guide you through. Anyway, when
They were trolling for you.
Well, you know, not as overtly as they do now with NASA and NSA, but back then, a special kid in science was always, you know, a highlight, and they watched the kid through, you know, college and things like that to see if maybe they might be useful later on. They kept tabs on us, if you would. Yeah. Anyway, when I came out of grad school, I went to work for Boeing, and that's where I got my secret and top secret clearances, and immediately was rushed by Navy. The first group was Navy SEALs. At that time, it was called SEAL Corporation, and basically I was charged with doing most of the extrasensory perception work for Navy. And we knew that, well, I'll explain later. When I did so well with them, they moved me up into becoming Northwest Regional Director under MRU, Mankind Research Unlimited, under Dr. Carl Schleicher. He was out of Wisconsin Avenue. I was out of the University of Washington. They had us basically stationed at the University of Washington, mostly in anesthesiology, although I had workers. At one point, I ran maybe 100 different projects at any given time, from Argonne National Laboratories, Stanford Research Institute, China Lake, the Boeing Scientific Research Labs. We had studies going on all over the place. I had maybe 100 different projects ongoing. So we had a couple hundred people that were involved in different paranormal studies. That's primarily what our focus was paranormal. And I ran most of the projects out of anesthesiology as a biophysicist. We were on fourth floor, which is where all the research under Ray Fink occurred, under John Benica. And this is before Hameroff or any of these kinds of people. And the guy on the left side of me over there in that lab was a guy named Delgado that had monkeys with chips in their head. And the guy on the other lab, on the other side of me, was Dr. Moore, doing telepathine, ketamine, BZ studies with drugs. And I was the physicist, so I was doing work mostly with microwave and some imaging, what we call eidetic imaging tools. So we were doing mind control studies out of the University of Washington. Later, when I realized what I was doing, of course, I hit the brakes. And I had written some very important papers. Most of them were classified. So that was one of the reasons when Nexus had me write from double helix to biohologram. It was to document the fact that I was about 10 years earlier on the holographic concept of reality before Carl Prebrum or John Bohm. And that what made it classified top secret was the work I did with embryonic holography, where at that time, that was circa 1974, I suggested that the DNA was a three-dimensional hologram, a four-space, i.e., what you were, are, and will be. And that began my work in the holographic universe, which I guess that's the topic you wanted to talk to him about tonight. But we don't have to. We can go anywhere you want to. I just thought I would suggest that if we stayed focused with the holographic concept, I could maybe you know, give you guys some new concepts on what's going on in the world of physics right now.
Yeah, I think that that's a good place to start. I want to have you on the show many more times because what you've got to share is so incredible, and it's so necessary to all of the people who really want to move into the higher consciousness and stay there and you know, keep going.
Well, trying to do that since the beginning of time, man, is searched.
Yeah,
you know,
but not enough people. And the thing is that you're doing it from science, Rick. That's what's so amazing.
Well, there's some evidence to indicate that physics may become a lesser entity to biology. And this is a new thing that's coming out. Will biology solve the universe, you know, in that Wired magazine? But, the physics is a tool for visualizing in your mind's eye. But when you talk metaphor, like the Hopi, when they do a sand painting, that at some point or some level looks like a solid-state physics device. And the way it's turned off by the Buddhists is done with a sweep of the hand. And so technology has a lot of words that may or may not be correct. In fact, I now am ending a lot of my talks by suggesting that as chemistry has come out of alchemy, so now magic will emerge from physics. There's a need in physics for a mystery school, and while we haven't centered on that yet, this new movement with Robert Lanza and some of these others that are suggesting that, you know, we're not created by the universe like creationists would have us believe, but rather we are in fact creating the universe, and that's the topic or direction of one of my new books that I'm writing, The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe. I have been moving toward that since I've re-entered parapsychology. I originally, when I dropped out, I became a dirt farmer. For the last 35 years, I've been farming herbs in almost every state, every province in Canada. And this year, for example, I'll export maybe 130 truckloads, 53-foot highboys of pine cones alone. You know, I've got people out in the woods, just picking up. In fact, we're going to work out of Colorado this year. So with that said, I know, it's cool. It's about transportation. I guess where I could start was where I first encountered the concept of a hologram. I was working at DuPont. I was at their experimental research station. Before I went back to graduate school, I'd come out of Washington State University. I had built the first plasma jet, was absolutely certain that I was going into high-energy physics because of plasma physics. In fact, I'm even writing a paper right now on that subject. But it was interesting because DuPont wanted me to go back to graduate school in solid-state physics. That's where they started me at Delaware under R.B. Murray, who was the Nobel Prize winner in solid-state physics. And then from there I moved to Princeton, where I had Roger Penrose and several really good instructors there. And then, of course, when I was at MIT, I had Dr. Charles Muses in hyperdimensional math. I was taking, at the time I was at MIT, it was really interesting. The Corning had developed a new computer concept working on NOR-NAND logic rather than AND or NOT, which was primarily relay. And it was little puffs of air. They were making them out of ceramic chips that they stacked like Schmidt triggers and things like that. And they were more suitable for space with gamma rays and other things like that. I could never understand why technology chose to go in the direction of monolithic circuits until later, when more dots were connected, and Colonel Corsair, later General Corsair, his book on The Day After Roswell says that solid-state physics came from Roswell. It was like a Trojan horse. I knew some of that because we were doing time travel studies with Navy. We were able to take particles when I was in Seattle, and I was actually able to advance them 6.4 times 10 to the minus 6 seconds into the future. I could literally do that. It was called tunneling at that time, And we had event horizons and what we called precursor waves in a lattice structure, where we knew an event would occur before it happened. Interestingly, there's a new paper that just came out called, Experimental Realization of the Wheeler's Delayed Choice Dindonkin Experiment, where they're working with interferometers and using a random generator to determine whether or not it's going to be a wave or a particle that's going through there. And it's very interesting that it's always what the biology dictates, not the physics. And so what we're realizing now is that the mind, how do I express this? The brain, what a hologram is n dimensions of information that have been compressed into n minus one dimensions. It's an abbreviation system. And so it's a way of compacting information on itself. And so at one point, you know, we'd have a beam splitter that would split the beam, and we'd get two shots of the laser off an object, one causing an interference pattern, and that interference pattern became physical reality, or what we looked like a three-dimensional image out of a two-dimensional film strip. Well, that's when I placed the first dots together and suggested that the DNA then was a three-dimensional hologram of four space, and I said that back in 1974. What I'm saying today with the non-local mind is that the brain is a four-dimensional hologram of five space, which means you can change the movie.
You know, and I've seen instances of that kind of stuff happening.
Oh, sure. It's absolutely.
And that's why I keep telling people it's really important that you don't buy into all the fearful stuff that's happening on the planet. You really have to consider, you know, what we all want and move towards that and completely ignore this other stuff, because you can create it.
That's an issue. Yeah, that's an issue that has the distinction between what's free will and true will. Mm-hmm. You know, that ability to have a choice of, you know, where you're going. And do we have choice?
I firmly believe we do.
Of course, I would then in rebuttal say to you backwards and joking, well, I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it.
Well,
that's the way it works. Yeah, exactly. Once you've got it, how it works in your mind's eye, it doesn't matter whether it's right or not. As long as you can see how it would work in your mind's eye, the dot connecting, that becomes reality.
Yeah, and I've seen this, and I think I've mentioned it on the show before when I was talking with Brent Baum, who came up with the holographic memory resolution technique. And he said that he changed things, you know, just to help himself to get over trauma in his life. And when he went back to his family reunion 20 or 30 years later, everybody in his family remembered it the way he had restructured it. Nobody remembered it.
There you go. That's the Dindonkin experiment. Now you're getting into the spirit of the thing. It's like the Dindonkin experiments are where your choices today affect what happened in the past.
Yeah.
That's Dr. Wheeler's work.
Yeah. That is so fascinating.
Well,
now explain how that happens.
I'm writing the book as we speak. How's that one sound? I've been working with Holosync Centerpoint discs for more than 3 years. Literally every day I do it. And to attempt to try to remap my brain. And, you know, my history, my past, when I was doing all of this work, it wasn't any big deal. Nobody was interested in that. We were blue sky. We were out there on the edge. And, you know, we had funding and we had secrecy and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't as glamorous as it's being put on today. And as it unfolds, my history, what I did, becomes weirder and heavier as I get older and older. I can't believe it. It's amazing. I couldn't have written a better movie script if I'd tried to. You know, when I was working for SEAL Corporation, I didn't know they were Navy. I didn't know it was Navy. It was the SEAL Corporation out of Amherst. You know, and we were doing all their ESP studies.
And that's something I would have liked to have been involved in.
Why? Oh, ESP stuff? Well, we have discussed, I have a new book coming out. Nick Begich is going to publish this one of mine called ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis. And it's all the early work I did. It even has a mathematical, an algebraic expression, if you will, for consciousness. It's a simplistic model, certainly, but it absolutely works. I can take anybody, literally, where they are normal, and some might be gifted psychics right off the get, and by placing them in an altered state, a specific altered state, I can improve their ability and guessing 400 times. That means that altered states are useful for the ability to change physical laws. In other words, statistical inference doesn't occur or is a law in this state of consciousness. Doesn't work there. And so with that said, where does that go?
I think it's going to be fascinating, and you and I are going to find out in Sedona. And, you know, we are going to go ahead and schedule that summer.
You're going to try to put a workshop together. Okay, cool. That's really good. What I would like to do is when everybody gets there, we just measure your baseline ESP, you know, where you are at that moment, and then I'll go through how it all works, take you through some guided imagery to get you to that place, and then remeasure you before you leave. That's the bottom line. That ought to put a cap on that. They did that with me at the first Gnosticon. Remember Gnostica News out of Llewellyn? They were out of Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yeah.
In 1974, Carl Wyszewski decided he was going to bring in, at that time it was no longer, Dr. Ryan's lab had moved off across the street and became what was known as the Foundation for the Study of Man. That's where they took all those little weird kids that you see in the movies that can do all terrible things. Yeah, that's called the Foundation for the Study of Man. It's in Raleigh, or in Durham, North Carolina. And it's across the street. And it's a big three-story house, and it's got some strange studies going on there. But anyway, they brought them in, and they invited Gene Dixon, James Hertak. They had everybody at that time that was psychically, you know, banging drums, that they could do readings, whatever they did. And they invited me in to test my model. And, of course, I won it, like, way beyond Gene Dixon or any of the others, to the point where, toward the end, everybody was getting scared because the thing works. And anybody can do it. It's not about me. It's about the ability to control your mind. That's one of the reasons for meditation. That's the purpose of a lot of these ancient studies, was to work from a different place in your brain and to... Once you can move from one place in the brain to another, you can do things you can't do in the other place, including change your reality in the movie you're enjoying.
Sure. And this is one of the things that I bring across in this program, because with this holographic chamber that I have, that's what it's all about. And it's using quantum physics. I mean, it's not woo-woo, it's real. And I keep trying to explain to people, all it takes is your intent, focused intent, And then, you know, hooking the limbic system up with it is kind of what drives it. It makes it happen faster.
But Andrea Puharich, yeah. Puharich was the one that actually, when his, that one book he wrote, Beyond Telepathy, it was exceptional work. Andrea Puharich wrote this book called Beyond Telepathy, where he talked about your parasympathetic nervous system, how you can reprogram it for things like allergies, your histamine responses, that kind of thing, that drugs are no longer necessary. And you're right about the limbic system. There's a series of different exercises that you can do. I think Marilyn Ferguson wrote about a lot of that during her brain-mind bulletin stuff back in the early years when we were, you know, Tarcher, I think, published that stuff originally. And there's things that you can do that are amazing. And all the different states, all the different places from coming in and into sleep, going out of sleep, lovemaking, all the different altered states that occur, each one is almost like it's quantized to be able to do something specific that you couldn't do in a conscious state. Mm-hmm. And so you can learn to play your brain like you would your muscles and be able to change your movie, the current movie that you're enjoying, which mostly I think is Horror on Elm Street, isn't it? Something like that. It's terrible.
Yeah, something like that. Either that or Inferno.
Well, Bush, Iraq, the whole thing is just a mess. And the more that urban myths grow about conspiracy and things of that nature, the more it becomes even real. It's nuts what's going on.
Yeah, and you know, that's another thing I try to get across, you know, see what's going on, do what yours do, and then don't do anything else, you know, just kind of understand what's going on and decide to change it, you know, become proactive. And I keep telling people, you don't have to go out there and bang the drum on the street corner, you know, and you don't have to get shot at and threatened and all this other kind of stuff. All you have to do is sit in the comfort of your home and with conscious intent and love in your heart, change everything in your world, and then that changes the outer world here.
The process works that way, yes. It goes from the inside out. That is correct. It's very rarely does it come from the outside in, which means the universe is not really creating you. You are, in fact, creating the universe. That is a correct thing. Actually, there's a dialogue that's actually going on, almost verging on consciousness. There's Schumann's resonance, which I've written extensively about, which I call the voice of the planet. This is this the cavity of the Earth, you know, the geometry of the Earth with the ionosphere creates an electromagnetic waveguide that responds to lightning strikes, plasma. And our heartbeat and the way it presses on the temporal lobes, same frequencies at 7.8 hertz. Very interesting stuff. That's how migratory patterns of birds are determined. We now realize that there's another circulatory system in the body called the microtubule that is sensitive to latitude. And you can have a sense, not just from light. You know, when I was up in Alaska writing this book with Nick, I watched the sun come up and set in the same place. And that was very strange. The sun came straight up and then went straight down. And I went, yeah, that's kind of weird. They have a little less light than we do down here. It makes a lot of difference in terms of depression, suicide, those kinds of things. And there's a dialogue that's going on with light and resonances of all kinds in your body that set your biorhythms and mood and tone. And then, of course, the way you're whelped or birthed determines what part of the brain you're working from. Most of us right now are in horror central, you know, because it's – and none of it's real. You know, none of what our belief systems would hold true is probably real at all.
I totally agree. You know, I think I told you I've been near death 5 times, and I know what's real, and this isn't it. And it's really kind of interesting. And you know, I have a lot of fun in life because I realize these things. And as long as I can keep myself in that fun space in my heart, I'm fine. You know, because none of this other baloney exists out there. But before I forget, I wanted to ask you. I was reading that in one of your papers that you sent me, and I found was so fascinating. I think it was meditation and resonance effects.
Oh, uh-huh.
You were talking in there about the heart chakra resonant cavity.
Right. It's taken man generations to evolve the aortic arch to the length that it is, so that as the heart beats, it hits the aortic arch and it creates a backward systolic pressure that creates a beat frequency in your body. And you'll notice kids that are sitting, that are young kids, they'll start wiggling their feet and they're tapping to some unusual music noise. That's Schumann's resonance. It's the same thing. It's pressing against your brain in the way you breathe. That's why I call it Voice of the Planet, because it is a unique geometric configuration that is not changing. You know, we're not changing the resonant cavity.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people are saying, oh, no.
Yeah.
The planet is going up to the fourth dimension, and now
no.
It's
no. Yeah.
And I'm like, what? How could that be?
No. Yeah. But what's happening is that people think that we're changing the ionosphere, which we're not. The ionosphere is a layer of gases above the atmosphere that are not changing, and what that is, it forms a resonant cavity oscillator. It's like it's solid, if you will, to certain plasma discharges, lightning. And as a result, one of the first things they did with Schumann's resonance, I have some physics here somewhere I might be able to. What it's doing, I think it's the lightning is creating a new kind of life form up in the upper atmosphere called sprites. I'm not sure, but at any given time on Earth, there's about 2,000 thunderstorms around the globe at any given moment. And they each, maybe 50 lightning events per second going on. And these thunderstorms create what's called the background Schumann's resonance signal that we're getting. And it's like there's a ringing, if you will, a resonance. And that's at 7.8 hertz, which is right in the smack in the middle of theta, and is the same stochic pressure that's going up off the heart, hitting the aortic arch, and that causing the central nervous system and all of that to compress on the brain, creating this dialogue, if you will. And learning how to control your mind's eye and imaging and what part of the brain that you're working from allows you to form a different kind of relationship to the same data. And as such, you can change the movie, if you will, on what's really happening. Like, you know, your thoughts right now will affect the fat past and what you really were and what you really did. So is the past already occurred, or is it occurring like now is occurring? And that question is the newest in the physics, and where we're now talking. See, I'm writing this paper. I don't want to lose you because I've got a thought here. I believe that there are a series of different kinds of elementary particles that existed during the Big Bang moment that don't exist anymore in the universe because it's cooled, or whatever, you know, way you want to metaphorically see that. It's like a different moment in the time slice. But we see that moment with what's called a quark-gluon plasma, which can't occur in normal universe, occurring on a quantum mechanical level from a muon. And so I'm writing a new paper on the muon catalytic fusion processes as it applies to adenosine triphosphate. I think that's where cold fusion occurs in the body, is at ATP level. And that is one of the other dialogue things that are going on, your energy, your source of able to do what you do, and rather than moping out and going to bed and that kind of thing.
Well, you know, and what you just said makes sense, too, from a biological standpoint, and from a lot of things I've been reading lately, talking about the electric universe and
plasma. Wall Thornhill,
throughout space and all this kind of stuff. But when you look at how ATP is formed, and you look at the mitochondria are termed a crystalline structure. And those are
You have liquid crystal phases. Liquid crystal phase, right. It's amorphous semiconductor, actually.
I find that fascinating, and it answers a whole lot of questions for those of us that have been in metaphysics for a lifetime.
Yes. What do you think the temporal lobes are, you know? The temporal lobes, for example, are great big sacks of fluid. They're not like brain tissue. What is it? The temporal lobes. And so what they are is big piezoelectric crystals that respond to microwaves. That's in my paper, The Synthetic Telepathy. That was one of the things we did for SEALs, was that we took some of Alan Frey's work and developed some weapons with it. And what's known as Project Solo, that's the first weapon of choice that's being used now, is Project Solo, which is, a 0.3 to 3.0 gigahertz. It's your temporal lobes are extremely sensitive to that frequency band, and you can heterodyne and put voices in someone's head that does not go through the canal, you know, the ear canal or any of that kind of thing. You can just go directly onto the temporal lobe, and you can hear the ringing in your brain. And that would have had a wonderful application for the deaf. But, of course, the first weapons application was for weapons, and that's what it's used for now. And it will be some time before we find uses for it in medicine, if you will, you know, where we change the application.
Yeah, and if we ever do, you know. And, you know,
well, we will. It always happens. We did it with nuclear energy. I mean, you know, it takes about 30 years, but, you know.
Well, let me ask you, too, though, and, you know, there are a lot of people that listen to this show and others that are concerned with all the things that we hear, mind control being one of them, and the whole HARP project and all these things.
Nick's work, yeah. Nick Begich has done a really nice job on that. He's actually written that book, Mind Control, and it's pretty well documents what's going on. And there's now new stuff. I just read about a new strobe that's not in the microwave region. It's slightly above in the millimeter range region that is flashing white light like we see in the alien abduction movies, where your brain goes soft. You lose consciousness. They can make groups of people lose consciousness with a type of strobing white light. It's different than would cause a strobe light causing someone to go into ventricular fibrillation. It does the same thing to the brain, like the movie MIB, Men in Black, where they had the little look at the pen and flash.
Yeah.
They have that now as a weapons in the what we call the non-lethal weapons arsenal. The problem is, the Nick pointed out that a Claymore mine would be construed as a non-lethal weapon, and it only blows off your legs. It doesn't kill you. Well, I mean, you know, the difference of having, a definition of what constitutes a non-invasive, non-lethal weapon is kind of strange. You know, tasers and masers are what we invented, but the list now goes into using white light and other kinds of flashes. Originally, they used phosphorus. Now they have a strobing white light that will it causes you to just stop and your brain short circuits. You don't function. It won't strangle you. It won't kill you, because your brain is still functioning, but it stops the cognitive processes. It just closes you down.
And so now here's my concern about this. The military has a long record of experimenting on the citizens without telling them or giving them a choice, and they consider, a certain amount of casualties to be just fine because it's not them that are the casualties. And so the question is then, what can we do to prevent this kind of stuff from being used on the general public?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? Walmart is going to use, they're going to have in their stores this next year a center of the store. Right in the center of the store is called the center. And what it is if you step inside the circle, you will hear voices in your head from synthetic telepathy trying to sell you items in the store. In other words, it's a free will thing, but, it's something they're going to do as a novelty, but is now, what is that, for commercial application type of thing. Actually, a lot of the mind control studies actually stopped. I'm being cliché here. When we invented TV, that pretty much took care of it. You can do a Google on 2.4 hertz and come up with a patent that the Navy's patented as a weapon, which is the hum of your TV. And you can there were studies that were done in target cities using methamphetamine or other related drugs so that we could gate across the blood-brain barrier with certain kinds of light and sounds. And once we could get across the blood-brain barrier, you could do anything you wanted.
That brings up a lot of things. First thing I tell people is don't ever go to sleep with your television set on. And
well, that's from, what is that? They're here. They're back.
When people have certain things going on, I know right away they fall asleep with their TV on. And the other thing is, I noticed about 6 months ago or so, I was sitting there watching something, and all of a sudden the screen went blue, and a series of flashes started. And man, I turned it off in a hot second and looked away because I went, "Damn it!"
There's a level of participation like hypnosis where you have some ability to switch it off if you know that it's happening in the first place. Subliminal is just that. It's below consciousness. So, and when you start talking about the next generation of subliminal, at what level is free will an illusion? It's a moral. It's the moral question, and it's one that has to do with intentionality and purpose. And where does man have divine rights? Are those the Ten Commandments? Where those kinds of questions are difficult to respond to, because I can prove in another thing I've written on techno-shamanism that God is probably nothing more than a molecule in your brain. And if that's true, what would that constitute for an alien or something of that nature? Hybrid, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think that finally the world is waking up enough that these kinds of concepts can be put out there. Although you still have to deal with the religious fanatics and everything.
But well, yeah, and then there's Kurzweil, you know, that talks about us collapsing down into a singularity. What does that mean? Well, I mean, there it is. Read it and weep. We may not be here very long. And it's a better and wiser. Enjoy what you got while you got it. And because, you know, if in one sense, if you saw man as a product of the gods out here on the rim doing biological experiments, I could suggest that it probably isn't even about man. Mm-hmm. It's probably cetacean, for example, probably the dolphin and the whale, the orca, you know, those kinds of things. There's like six mammals on this earth that have bigger brain cases than men. And with that said, while it isn't true about computation algorithms and things of that nature and the way you network information, crunching power is the size of the brain. That's why they call them bird brains. I mean, you know, it's the size of your crunching power. And you realize that orca has a cerebral cortex that's twice the size of man, that's the higher brain functions, and is firing 60% of it. What does that mean?
And
the dolphin, when Carl Sagan was doing his studies with John Lilly, I was the physicist that they took in, and I was there like, 10 days when I realized that the clicks and whistles of the dolphin was a form of Clifford algebra. That was one of the projects we did. It was dimensional math. Yeah. They had a redundancy coefficient that was like 10 times more efficient than Hebrew. I know languages. This memory thing I have has allowed me to study several languages. And I have to say that the dolphin's language is so far above, and they're lower on the food chain than orca. Further, they have technologies, you can find it on the web, where they do a thing with MIT studying now called sonoluminescence, where they blow these microbubbles in a form of artwork. That's cold fusion. And they're blowing that just as an art form. I don't know that man is that far evolved from the whole situation in that sense of it. We, in many ways, don't have a true concept yet of time or space. We don't even know what that means. And I noticed that Albert Einstein was rather vague in the way he tried to define it. Sorry. Go ahead.
I think that... you're gonna have to be on a lot of other shows. We just don't have enough time to go into all this. But
well, I didn't mean to scatter like this. I didn't mean that, but you know, I needed some direction from you. So we're just flowing where you want to go.
Okay. Yeah. Well, before we get off of the scatter, I wanted to ask you something very important about EMFs. You know, because I'm reading in so many things that that the electromagnetic frequency is what we operate on, and that's how we create and everything else. So my question is, if that is true, then what are these anti-EMF products doing? So we're trying to stop all of the EMFs from our computers and lamps and things like that.
Yeah. Well, electromagnetic force means everything is called EMF, it's electromagnetic. It means it has an electric and magnetic component that are, you know, at right angles to each other, and it ranges from everything from elementary particles on it down to nothing like light. And the range, you know, visible light, long ultraviolet, all of that, they're all electromagnetic fields. Now, man... I used to have an idea of the hologram. I used to say that Captain Cathay, he was with the New Zealand Air Force at the time I was doing a lot of my studies. He wrote a Harmonic 33 and a couple of other 675 or something like that. Well, what he did is he did a conformal mapping of the Earth on energy fields. You know, you got solar winds and you got this and you got that, Coriolis forces, whatever. And when he placed those in grids across the Earth, he found that there were seven places on Earth that had node spots where there was a cancellation of electromagnetic fields, i.e., you know, minimal, let's say, not, you know, strong but weak, smaller, less, not negative, less. And one of those was the Bermuda Triangle. Now, if the DNA... is a three-dimensional hologram of force space, and you remove the electromagnetic field that's going through the DNA, what happens to the projection or the man or the airplane?
That's my question.
Well, it ceases to exist. Now, did it exist or not exist? Yes, it did and it didn't, because the electromagnetic wave is a three-dimensional wave front of four space, and four space is less than five space, and if you're into string theory, there are 9 dimensions, and I mean 10 dimensions and an 11th binding one, or 11 dimensions by most theories. But yeah, you know, if it's multidimensional, you could look at the universe as like an interconnecting foam, and you blow one tube up, and all the rest of them around it collapse down into singularities. That's what Kurzweil is suggesting is about to happen. We will collapse down into a singularity because some other part of the universe has a bigger thought. Just kidding. Just kidding.
And we wouldn't care anyway.
Yeah. Well, what wouldn't care?
Well, that's the question.
Yeah. There you go. And maybe you are the higher thought.
Maybe.
No, that sounds like
I'm the higher thought.
Yeah, that's comic book stuff. We'll save that one for Dark Horse Press. well, they did Alien versus Predator. What do you think? I mean, you know, they're really out there on that limb. And all of this is probably true. Like urban myths, they become their own reality. I think it was Gregory Bateson. I took a course from Gregory Bateson, and he once said to me, "What is your metaphor but to serve your paradox?" And so my opening picture on that would be a couple of ox out in a field. What is your metaphor but to serve your paradox? Well, it gives you an idea of how we chunk information into memes. I mean, you know, physical, emotional, intellectual, archetypal. Actually, there's 7 octaves in there's 7 chords in an octave. You know, there's 8. There's your Fibonacci. You know who did that? That was Pythagoras. He was a true genius. He not only did octaves, he also did Bravais lattices, which I use in solid state physics, on how matter collapses in on itself. You know, that's how matter can fit with itself, you know, physical shapes and rhombohedron and whatever, and this can fit this way, but it can't fit that way type of thing. And all of that has to do with resonance, which is what now is the big buzzword, is resonance projects for the subconscious, the subconscious resonance project. That's an interesting paper. Elizabeth Rauscher and another have written on. I found very interesting. I'm finding a lot of interesting stuff coming out now that when we left and closed down in the late 70s, the field of paranormal and those studies, it seems like it stopped. The kind of work that was done, metaphorically speaking, changed, and it was for application. Originally, when I was in physics, it was about blue sky. We didn't know where a study was going to take us, but it was for the knowledge of, you know, knowing what that was about. It wasn't like for application. Let me give you an example. When we did ESP, we studied astral projection, but now the TARG put-off studies are moved toward application, where it's called now remote viewing, where it has an application, military type of an application to it. And I have to say that from what I have seen and studied on remote viewing, which is new for me, I did astral projection studies and stuff, I'm finding that remote viewing is more like PK phenomena. It's outside the body. It's like kind of dangerous in a sense that not only is the observer changing the reality that he's looking at, he's also being changed by that reality. And so if you're looking in on a hostile situation, for whatever, you know, purpose or reason, there's some possibility of that being like a Klingon, you know, little demons, like that's what they call them. They hook on and they change you. You change your reality, like as much as you're changing the reality you're looking at.
That's interesting. I have a friend who teaches the military protocol remote viewing.
Remote viewing, yeah. That's an application.
He said it's not psychism at all.
No, it's something else altogether. That's right. It actually, in fact, falls in what we call PK phenomena, outside the body. PK phenomena included teleportation, astral, apportation, levitation, you know, those kinds of things, where there was physical changes in the environment from the mind, outside the body. Astral projection, of course, you still had that silver cord that connected your physical body with your astral body. You, precognition, or retrocognition, you know, it's looking into the past on what happened, radiesthesia. Radiesthesia is an ESP phenomenon where you use an external device to communicate to your subconscious. And that could be like the I Ching, tarot cards, bones, runes, whatever. You know,
radionics device.
Well, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Interestingly, when we were doing studies with Hieronymus, when he was still in Florida, he murdered a bunch of insects in a tree up in Washington, D.C. with his radionics device. There was this big fall of insects falling out of a tree, and it was like everybody stood around staring at each other. Then what he did is he went into his box and removed all the wiring and put a schematic drawing inside the box, and it still worked.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the concept of radionics, you know, radiesthesia.
Sure.
Yeah, where you use an external device to communicate information to consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are all connected. And, you know, I don't see how we could ever not be connected. And it's like whenever something big happens in the world, and you look at the TV, you look at the news, of course we don't get the real news here anyway, but, you know, you look at the news and you go, uh-oh, that's not what's happening. Everybody actually knows what's going on, but they don't...
Well, I don't. I'd sure like to know what's going on. If anybody'd like to... I don't have a clue.
You need to come and hang out with me. I usually know.
I know.
Exactly
well, I hope to do that. Yeah, I hope to do that. When I went to Amsterdam, I got a chance to see some European news reporting, and it is quite different than domestic production. And CNN should be ashamed of themselves on this Condoleezza Rice, the lizard woman. No, that was the... Who was the famous actress that just... model that died?
Oh, Anna Nicole.
Yeah, that's embarrassing that the news spent as much time on that. I couldn't believe it. It's like someone needs a life. I mean, you know, really.
But when that stuff happens, it's because they're trying to take your attention away from what's really going on. And, you know, unfortunately, most of America was so engaged by that, they weren't watching what was really happening behind the scenes.
Our mind control experiments work then, doesn't it?
Yeah,
because,
it sure does.
I would say laughingly, because if you know that 9/11 didn't happen, 7/11 didn't happen, right, and you knew that the Pentagon wasn't hit by an airplane, and you knew that Bush probably didn't win over Gore in Florida, well, you know, looks like our mind control experiments work. People don't care, or they do care, but they don't believe they can do anything, and because they don't believe they can do anything, they can't.
Exactly.
It's as simple as
that. There's an old Chinese saying about that. If you think you can't do something, you're right.
Other part of it, there's positive affirmations. I mean, you can remap your brain and change things. Attitude, your belief systems. What I'm writing now is this book on how to change belief systems like you would a pair of clothing. You know, just be able to find that if, let's say, this belief, let's say in the Lord Jesus Christ or whatever, you know, whatever you're using, is not getting you out of your life what you seek, that doesn't mean you have to get rid of it. I have a pair of bell-bottom pants from the 70s I'm never going to throw away. I'll never fit in them again. But you get the idea. They're, like, so important to me, and they represent such a critical part of my life back then that I keep them just for the memory. And belief systems are like that. Sometimes they're just simply not appropriate. And if they're not appropriate, they're not going to get you toward the goal that you want, then what's the purpose of using that belief? They should be used like tools, not...
Well, you know, I agree. And we have to get people to the point where they kind of get that, you know, that if it's not working, dump it.
Well, there's, you know, they started with What the Bleep and then that movie The Secret, which is kind of a whorish version because it's really about values that I don't embrace, you know, having my own home, having $1 million. You know, money isn't real. And when you realize that the New World Order has been, that was what Dennis Kucinich said, when he said, New World Order, get used to it. It's already a done deal. The real powers are not the President of the United States. That's quite obvious. Mm-hmm. So what is the real President of the United States? Who would that be? Well, who makes all the gunpowder in the world that blows everybody up? And, oh, by the way, they also make all the plastic for overpackaging things. That's mm-hmm. DuPont. And you start to realize that corporate America, well, not corporate America anymore, corporate the world, you know, because certain cities in North America now are owned by other countries. And, like, I think it's Detroit is owned by the Arabs. I think that blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, it's, like, very strange. And so
when you start to really look at what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, I see the United States. I think that I have friends up in Canada that are they're fearful for what will happen when the United States realizes how duped and lied to we've been, Civil War-wise. And I see the United States probably fragmenting into like 7 or 9 countries, and you choose where you want to live predicated on how many civil rights you want to give up. And that... Yeah. For me, I'm not very politically astute. I'm a lower campus nerd, however. I like to hang out in the sciences. And so I figure what I can do is try to contribute my part in that arena because I don't know conspiracy very well. I'm really kind of silly and stupid about that. I don't have a lot of savvy about politics. I'm like more like a lower campus nerd wanting to do research for its own sake, you know?
Uh-huh. I I'm kind of along that line too. I've always said I'm apolitical, and I think that each person has to take responsibility for themselves throughout. And
well, that's the deal. That is the deal. It's about intentionality and taking responsibility for your actions, and that's the deal. And that's where man begins to evolve. It isn't by trying to change the world. What you do is you change yourself, and if as you change, so the world changes. And literally, that's how history will be rewritten, and everything will be... man has some divine rights. I just don't know what they are yet. I'm in that philosophical place of trying to define them. Is it around the Ten Commandments? No, I don't think so, because there might be other kinds of biological imperatives and so on. But... it's interesting. I don't have the answers in that. I'm sorry?
We do have the divine right to search for the truth.
Well, you can try. But see, how duped are we already? I mean, you know. Is reality happening or is it in the back end of my brain? Well, that's where did it occur first?
Yeah, good question. Well, with that, we're gonna have to stop for tonight, but... you know, I have to have you on a lot more times. I would love to have you on as many times as you'll be on because there are so many things to discuss about what you found in your research, what's going on, you know, with all the new discoveries in quantum physics and quantum mechanics and string theory and, you know, plasma physics.
Well, there's some foods you can eat now, too, that are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some new foods. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to talk about that on another show.
Cool.
We're gonna
have
to stop. They're going to put the hook around our necks. So let's give your contact information. So people to contact Dr. Miller, go to Northwest Botanicals. That's nwbotanicals.org. Or you can go to herbfarminfo.org.
Well, those are some books that I've written in the farming industry. I've got lots of websites. My primary website is nwbotanicals.org, that little creature under the bridge. And it's for Northwest Botanical. Yeah, there you go. And I've got lots of nooks and crannies on there. And if you go to the forums, there's other forums that I've had down at the bottom. You can go into some past ones on mind control and stuff like that. I've had lots of forums. So.
Yeah, and they'll definitely be searching those things, let me tell you. So thank you again, Rick, for being on the show.
My pleasure.
I love talking with you, and definitely we'll have you back many more times. And listeners, if you have any questions, you can either email me or you can email Dr. Miller, and we will have him on the show again. So, again, thank you, Rick, very much. And
nice talking to you, Dr. Valerie.
Right, with you as always. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week, and we'll have some more fascinating stuff. Until then, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.